What's up? Another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Ricardo Vance, also known as Ricky Vrance, and I have a great episode for you today. Returning guest, Scott Horton. He is from antiwar.com, Antiwar Radio, The Scott Horton Show, which is a great podcast. You can get it anywhere you can get this podcast. You can find his show. He's one of my go-to people in regards to geopolitics, what's going on in the world. He has a great book called Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. And he's been on the show a bunch of times. So go back, check the archives, check all the appearances. It's always some of my favorite conversations. Today, we prove to you that you can disagree on a lot of things and disagree in a manner that is civil and nobody gets mad. We talk about what else? The coronavirus, the hysteria, the quarantine, the lockdown, all that stuff. And we go through some of our own personal perspectives and research. And it was just a fun discussion with two people who don't necessarily agree on everything, but are willing to challenge ideas and have their ideas challenged. So I think it was a super fun discussion and evidence that you can find some people who you might disagree with and might disagree with you who can have a civil discussion about those disagreements. So I think these type of shows are always necessary. And like I always tell you guys, I think you learn the most having discussions with people you disagree with. And those are also some of the funnest conversations if you can find somebody who doesn't get emotional and name call and all that stuff. But anyways, so thanks everybody who's been supporting the show on Patreon. I truly appreciate it. Obviously, there's a lot of uncertainty with the future and what's going on in the world. So anybody who is supporting financially, I truly, truly appreciate it. Like I always say, if everybody who listens and downloads and plays this show gave a dollar, I could do this full time. So cross my fingers. Hopefully that's the goal. With all this quarantine stuff going on and having a little bit more free time because there's not a whole lot else to do, you know, in regards to going out or whatnot, I've been able to put out more shows, which hopefully is helping with building the audience and showing you guys that if I get the financial support, if I did this full time, this is what the future could be like. But if you can't support the show, like I always tell you guys, please share the show, spread the show, put on your social media, text it to your friends, review the show. Go on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you go to listen to your podcasts, Google Play, YouTube, wherever. Give me comments and reviews and all that stuff. And I think the most active shows in regards to feedback are the ones that will probably be suggested more or whatnot. So anything you can do, thumbs up, share it, tweet it, rate it, review it, all that stuff will help with spreading these conversations. And I truly believe these conversations are worth spreading and important. So hopefully you guys feel the same way. And what else? Also, anybody who calls in using video, you can see those video conversations on our YouTube channel, RV Theory 6, or just search the Ripple Effect Podcast. You'll find our YouTube channel. I also have a documentary playlist. If you guys want to go there and just search a bunch of interesting documentaries, if you're looking for something to watch, if you're bored at home, enjoy the show. And I will talk to you guys on the next one. Peace. Well, thanks for being with me. I really appreciate it. It's always nice catching up. How you been handling this whole quarantine thing? I mean, I know you're a busy man writing and doing your show or whatnot, so probably not much has changed, right?
Yeah, just my house smells like bleach water a lot more now. It reminds me of working in kitchens as a kid, you know?
Well, I wanted to get you on the show because there's been a lot of a debate with, you know, obviously there's been a lot of social media debate, and I feel like it almost seems like, you know, same way that like politics separates people and people pick a team and defend it till the end of time, I feel like this is doing the exact same thing where you're starting to see people pick a tribe and you're like, this is my tribe and I'm defending them. Either you're selfish for wanting to go out without a mask and wanting to reopen things too soon, or you're or the opposite, you know, where it's like, well, you know, we don't have enough evidence to prove that we should go to these drastic measures. So why should we be giving away our rights to pursue happiness and live our lives, and when is this going to end? When is the end game? So, you know, from a libertarian perspective, and the funny thing is I've seen some people who I thought were more libertarian thinking, even them kind of jump on the side of, well, if everybody just stays at home and everybody wears masks and everybody wears gloves, you know, and it's just like, okay, I get it, but there's so much conflicting information, and the long-term negative effects of this reaction might end up being even worse than what the virus, any I guess negativity the virus might cause to society. That I think all these things are in question. But what is your perspective from like a libertarian point of view on the stuff that's going on with the lockdowns, the some people being fined, some people getting in trouble for being in groups? I mean, I'm even seeing like social shaming in regards to like people telling on people who are at the park playing and all this stuff. What's your opinion on all this?
Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, I think the question is who decides?
Exactly.
Right? So, you know, if you think social distancing is a good idea, that shouldn't necessarily translate into, you know, emergency, lawless emergency orders by your governor along the same lines. And this is something that's always a problem with everyone, right? I mean, people in this society, they think an opinion is what you think the government should do to somebody else without even stopping to have a step in between and say, look, what's good for me is this. That doesn't necessarily have to translate into anyone's edict. And, you know, if I was the governor, what I would be doing is I would be encouraging, and from, you know, all along, I'd be encouraging people to wear gloves and wear masks and wash their hands as much as they can and keep their distance from other people. Work from home if you can work from home by all means in order to avoid spreading this stuff worse. But when you make that all mandatory and close down, I don't know, 3/4 of businesses or whatever the proportion is, and forbid people from going about their lives, then of course you just get this massive backlash that could end up being counterproductive. I mean, nobody knows exactly the future, but right now, you know, they ordered the severest clampdown apparently kind of early. And now we have all the states are all loosening up and the people are demanding. I mean, it's just a matter of disobedience, mass disobedience. The states are opening back up right at the peak. And so that's, you know, I don't know. It might end up burning itself out anyway. I'm actually pretty hopeful and optimistic that the thing's just going to end up burning itself out regardless. But it seems like that's a pretty big risk. If, right when cases are on the increase in many places of the country outside of New York, where they're finally on the downward swing, there are a lot of places still on the upward swing. And right when people are getting completely sick and tired of the lockdown and they're going ahead and going out anyway. And then, of course, like we saw in Wisconsin the other day, the Supreme Court struck down all the edicts and said, you have no right to do this, Governor. And people all immediately went to the bar and crowded in, you know, tiny little bar was the pictures I saw. And nobody has a mask at all. And, you know, I don't know, maybe they had improved their ventilation in there, but I think probably not, you know. So, but so then I wonder whether those people are making an informed decision there, or in other words, because what is deemed to be best is entirely correlated with your government's edict against you, then if the government is saying it's okay to come out, I guess everything's fine now, right? And so people are, you know, probably taking risks that they otherwise wouldn't take if they were just getting sound advice. You know, I mean, I think, you know, at the start of this thing, it was a real problem. Like people were getting infected and spreading it because they were going to church. And a lot of churches had closed down, but a lot of them hadn't. And they weren't trying to distance at all. They were just cramming everybody into the pews just as usual and saying, don't worry, Jesus will protect you and this kind of thing, which is really reckless. But so what are you going to do? You're going to empower your governor to issue a blatantly lawless edict closing down churches? You can't do that. What they should have done instead was to get the most prominent ministers and priests and whoever in the state, in their culture, that they could, and use their bully pulpit to encourage people. Hey, of course we got to still praise Jesus, but Let's do it from our cars out in the parking lot over a loudspeaker system. Or let's, weather permitting, let's have our service out in a field where we can keep a little bit further apart from each other and be careful not to spread this. It is a very dangerous disease for many of the people who get it, you know? And so I think that's the deal, man, is who decides should be the man of the house or the woman of the house in whatever the house for the 330 Americans, for them to make good decisions and to have access to good information. And instead, because it's a political football, we get back to what you said at the beginning. Everybody's just picking a side. Whose side are you on? So if you value, I mean, look at the competing interests here between public health on one hand, civil liberties on the other hand, and the economy too, right? So if you are less concerned about the virus and more concerned about civil liberties in the economy, then you have a huge incentive to play down the danger of the virus, right? But if your concern is the virus, then you have a huge incentive to play up the danger of the virus and to play down the economic consequences and the civil libertarian consequences. And so, but the thing is these things are all in competition with each other, and there's legitimacy all the way around. I mean, in my family, my wife has lupus, which means essentially her immune system is completely retarded, right? And so I have a severe, in fact, she was just having a flare. So we got her, you know, dosed up on steroids to suppress her lupus flare, which means suppress her entire immune system. So if she gets the COVID now, she's in much more danger of getting, you know, serious life-threatening pneumonia out of the thing. Well, actually, at the same time, maybe she'd be spared that cytokine storm that is happening. That is also one of the reasons that people are dying of the disease, is an immune overreaction. But in any case, obviously, my job is to keep her away from this germ at all costs, right? But that might not apply to your family, right? And your family might be all young and strong and healthy enough, and you have your economic interests in mind that you would prioritize over staying infection free for now. You know what I mean? For our family, we're going to have to wait until they figure out some medicinal treatments and or to see the germ really kind of burn itself out before we really go back out, because I just can't take the risk. You know, for myself, I wouldn't care, dude. I'd be out skateboarding right now, to tell you the truth. But I got this higher responsibility. But I'm not deciding for my next door neighbor, nor he for me. That's the deal.
I think that's the important thing. Like yesterday, I because there's been a lot of online debate. I'm usually, you know, it's funny. I just had another Texan on, Derek Bros. I don't know if you're familiar with him from the Conscious Resistance. He's from Houston. He's on Freethinker Radio. But you know, we're talking about how, like, we're all kind of on the same team, and we're all like, it's not that I'm being reckless with me saying things online. It's more like, even though I don't like confrontation, my passion and desire to, like, spread information or tell people that, hey, if you have a opinion, don't be scared or publicly shamed to not share it, you know, because sometimes we're going to have opinions that might be controversial, might be, or, you know, media might call it controversial, or the public, the majority of people might call it controversial. But these conversations, if you have them in a civil manner, like, those are the conversations that are the most important, the ones we don't all agree on, the ones that we should be discussing. And, you know, I know just about every time I post something, there's going to be, I mean, it just opens up a bag of worms, and there's just havoc just going crazy in the comment section. But, you know, like even yesterday, something as simple, I'm like, oh, you know, I have a solution that will make everybody happy. Those who want to stay at home and wear masks and gloves for as long as they need to feel safe, go ahead. The rest of us who want to go out, we'll just speed up the herd immunity a little quicker, and we'll live our lives at our own risk, and nobody should be able to tell the other one otherwise. And of course, seems uncontroversial, because it's like, some people get what they want, other people get what they want, but in no time, it's like, no, well, that's selfish, and this is selfish. And it's like, you know, it's one of those things, like you said, it's like people have personal views, and then they think that the government should be the ones enforcing those personal views. But like, okay, I'm not a religious person, for example, but I believe that people have the right to believe whatever they want, you know, whenever they want. If we get a hardcore Christian politician in office, he has right to his views, but I don't think he should change the way, you know, the laws based on his Christian views. I mean, I remember Ron Paul, when he was running, he was asked this, and it was you know, he made a great point that people don't really take in consideration. It's like, yes, I might be anti-abortion, but as a libertarian and believe in freedom, I think that people, like, my way of fighting that isn't creating a law to ban it, but it's sharing my perspective and sharing the information and let people be the judge from there. And I think that's super important. It's super important for people to understand. It's like, if we get a Muslim or a Jewish or whoever president, or take religion out of it, because that sometimes can be people can get a little tribal with that, but it's not about religion. It's about, like, whatever perspective you might have. If you have a very strong opinion on something, if I get in office, I shouldn't decide that everybody's rights revolve around what my opinion is on a topic. People should still have those freedoms and those rights. And so it just, you're seeing people, you know, and I see the argument, like, I've heard people say, well, you have the right to swing your fist until that fist hits me. And they're using that as a metaphor to say that, well, you have the right to put your body at risk with the virus. But if you're going out and getting people sick, then, you know, you're hurting people or you're whatever. But what I don't understand is that people have died from the flu and other viruses and other things forever. And we spread this stuff at concerts. We spread this stuff at sporting events. We spread this stuff all the time. We never backtrack. You know, you're hearing a lot of people talking about, like, you know, tracing who you've been around, if you've been tracking and tracing, you know, who you've been contact tracing and all this stuff. We've never said, like, hey, let's find out that person who died from the flu. Let's find out who had it. And who gave it to that person, because they should be responsible. You know what I mean? Like, we kind of understand that when a part of living and being free animals, human beings, there is going to be a risk. Like, people get in car accidents. Yes, if we all stayed at home and never drove again, we could make the argument that it's going to save some lives. But, you know, should we stop people from having the right to drive? Should we stop? You know, it's like, if you want to decide not to drive, that's okay. If you don't think the risk is worth the reward, that's fine. But so to me, it's a very blurry line.
Yeah. Well, no, I understand what you mean. But so, you know, with the flu argument is a good one. So, but the other side of that would be probably not for this virus, which is, you know, much more virulent than the flu. Probably more transmissible. I'm not exactly sure, but certainly more dangerous than the flu in many ways. But take the argument ad absurdum, right? Let's say instead of old people were the ones most susceptible to this, what if it was all children who were dying of it?
Yeah, I think that's the argument, right? Is that I think based on the information we have, I'm not saying that I think a lot of people who probably have similar views as myself, if there was more evidence, if that, you know, because, I mean, they've said it. Dr. Birx has said it during a press conference. 99% of people in Europe who've passed away. And this is, I mean, she's looking at all the science. She's in contact with the people in Europe and all the big organizations or whatnot. She said in the press conference, like, 99% of all people were over the age of 65 and had one or more pre-existing conditions. So it's like,
was it 99?
I think she said 99. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
It was in the 90s. I'm almost positive it was 99. It was an older clip. It was a press conference from probably a month ago or whatnot. But you know, Rand Paul, I mean, just said a day ago or whatever, you know, was just talking about, like, basically it's almost zero if you're under the age of 18 or younger, or if you're right, whatever, you know. So it's like, when you, so to me, it's like, and then obviously, you know, the Neil Ferguson story, he had these ridiculously large numbers and then he backtracked, and obviously he just broke his lockdown thing and got arrested for going to see his mistress or whatnot. But, you know, so his numbers were out of whack. And just like Rand Paul said, just about everybody's predictions have been more wrong than right. There's been more wrong predictions than right predictions. So my thing is, and then you look at, like, you know, Dr. Birx has said during a press conference, you know, and this is the thing, is like, I feel like people just kind of watch the news's interpretation on what they said on the press conference, and nobody actually watches the press conference, because a lot of the stuff is just out in the open. It's like an open secret. Like she said, we're very liberal in regards to COVID-19 deaths. If you die by the virus or with the virus, like basically saying, like, you know, we're letting people decide that, hey, if you have the virus and it's not necessarily the cause of death, then, you know, we're going to let you account that as. And then there's a money motive, right? I mean, you hear tons of doctors and tons of people work at hospitals talking about, you know, getting federal. I mean, my family, we own a little construction company. We do some road construction and stuff like that. And we know cities and towns, even if they don't need the money, if there's money out there from the government, they're going to attempt to get it. They're going to be like, yeah, I'm going to try to get this grant. Why not? It's free money. You know?
On the other hand, you know, the numbers are being way undercounted as well because, you know, people have it out in the country and are dying of it and are not being tested. There's been a severe lack of testing all along, too. I'd be willing to bet that there are more people dying of it that are being undercounted than are being overcounted. Although you're right that you give a hospital an incentive to label every death a COVID death, they're going to be much more inclined to do that. But if you round it off, right now they're saying it's 80,000 dead. So let's say they're exaggerating by 10 or even 20,000, right? So 60,000 dead in 6 weeks. That's a big deal. And now most of that is in New York and most of that is in nursing homes and this kind of thing. But that's not equivalent to a bad flu. You know, that is far more severe than a bad flu. And in fact, what people always bring up is the stat from 2 years ago that, well, 60,000 people died 2 years ago. Well, that's complete bullshit, right? Like 15,000 or so died 2 years ago. And those numbers were adjusted upwards for exactly the same kind of incentives and reasons that we're talking about in this case. But if you counted those flu deaths the way these are being counted, it would be much more like 15 or 20, and that's through a whole season. That's not in 6 weeks or, you know, 8 weeks time like we're looking at here. So I think.
But isn't there an argument in regard
to what we started with about whose side are you on here?
Yeah,
if you're on the side of freedom, then you have every incentive in the world to play down every bit of the danger of this thing and latch on to every statistic that makes it seem like it's not that big of a deal and ignore everyone that says that actually it sure as hell is. For example, 100 or so doctors and nurses in America have died in the past 8 or 10 weeks of this thing, whatever it is. Same thing in England. Do you ever hear that from a particularly severe flu season that 100 nurses and doctors had died? I mean, that is unheard of. This is not the same thing as that. On the other hand, though, you still have an important point. I'm not trying to undermine it completely. I mean, if you've ever seen the movie Contagion, I think everybody should see the movie Contagion, okay? It's got Matt Damon is in it.
Yeah.
And essentially, it's the exact same scenario here. A virus comes from a bat, gets transferred through a pig. I'm ruining the ending for you. And spreads through American society. Okay, well, on a scale of 1 to contagion, this is like a 4, right? Like the virus, essentially it's the exact same thing that's going on now, only in that movie, the virus is much more deadly, much more deadly. And so we're only at like a 3 or a 4 compared to that. And I think you'd probably be right. I would probably agree with you if you thought that the level of lockdown we're under now might be justified if we were living through the movie Contagion. But we're not. On a scale of 1 to contagion, this is still only like a 3 or a 4. This should not have to be a society-ending epidemic. And, you know, as David Stockman says, the doctor's killing the patient here. The economic consequences of the lockdown here are going to be so severe. And you know, people, and I understand this kind of point of view a little bit, you know, where people come from, where they talk about, oh, you just want to sacrifice lives for the economy. Like the economy just means profits for the very richest Wall Street tycoons or whatever, rather than human activity, you know, of all people trying to get by and that kind of deal. But in reality, the economic consequences of the lockdown, where you're looking at Great Depression percentages of unemployment and bankruptcies and this kind of thing across the board and across the country and this kind of deal, that's going to kill people too. That is a question of lives. It's not a matter of trading lives for money. It's a matter of trading lives for lives. And who gets to decide that when it means that on the margin, people who were getting sober are now going to drink themselves to death? And on the margin, when it means some kid who would have been at school, I just read one of these the other day, a kid that would have been at school got beaten to death by his mom's boyfriend, right? But because he was home from school. And this kind of thing is going to go on and on. And you know, and it's hard to even imagine the short term and medium term future of the economic consequences here. But I think, you know, I'm kind of, you know, surprised that it hasn't been worse than it is already. You know, they're sending out $1,200 checks to people. Well, that's not even enough for rent in a one bedroom apartment in Austin, Texas, much less food and car insurance and all the things that you need for your family. And then the people who are the poorest, they essentially live in an under the table cash only kind of economy anyway, where they're not registered with the IRS to even get that $1,200 check. They won't even see it in the first place. And then if they did, it'd be gone in an instant, right? It essentially benefit them not at all. And now in Austin, things are really nice. This is a very nice town. The very worst ghetto in Austin is just fine. You could go there at night and not get jumped. Like, it'd be fine. But not every city in America is like that. There are some places in America where people are very poor and have essentially no ability to provide a cushion for a time like this. I mean, I'm sure you've seen the aerial footage of the food bank line in San Antonio, where you're talking about, like, this is a bigger stack of cars than trying to get into the Sabbath reunion show at the Alamo Dome. I mean, this is, you know, I don't know, a quarter of the population, a fifth of the population of the town lined up to try to get some groceries. And I mean, this is just absolutely not sustainable. And as we know from every other recession and depression and every other kind of thing, when people lose their businesses, they shoot themselves in the head. Their kids go to foster care, and their, you know, their towns become destabilized and disrupted. You know, this is going to be, you know, we don't know, right? It's hard to say. If we lifted all the restrictions right now, how many more people would die of the germ? If we don't, how many more deaths are we going to cause through the excess death rate from all these other causes from the lockdown, economic and otherwise, of people, you know, especially being locked up with their mom's boyfriends? That's who beats kids to death. You see it all the time. And in this case, you see it more. You know, that's exactly what's going on here. It's terrible. And so, but unfortunately, you know, Ricky, you're just greedy because you want people to be, you know, able to decide for themselves. You just want to see the stock market go up becomes kind of the red herring argument when, in, you know, you're talking about the ability of people. And you know, sorry, one more tangent here.
Yeah.
It, libertarian ideology or whatever political ideology aside, it's always bothersome to me of just the selfish individual interest and the way that that is always represented. Like, where is the coalition of small business owners for the lockdown? Yes, we are losing our shirt, but God dang, this is a scary germ, and so we support it. That's what I want to see, right? I want to see well-paid government employees enjoying their paid vacation who demand an end to the lockdown so that other people can go back to work and save their small businesses. Just because I'm a big, fat, lazy government tax feeder doesn't mean that everybody is, and I understand that. And I think if people want to reopen their businesses, they should be allowed to, right? You don't ever hear anyone arguing against their own narrow self-interest here, which is really unfortunate. You know, people ought to be able to put themselves in the shoes of others. I saw a great tweet. I forgot who it was. Somebody tweeted that, you know what we should do? We should stop paying every college professor in America until the lockdowns are over. And then we'll see what they say about this, right? But of course, every college professor is still paid. And so what's every college professor's opinion? Let's go ahead and keep the lockdown. No skin off my chin. What do I care? And with the complete inability to see that people are losing everything that they worked for their whole lives, everything they've built their whole lives. You know,
well, that's the thing. I'm not, I have a lot of a libertarian. I subscribe to a lot of libertarian ideas, but I'm not one of those. I don't really give a shit about the stock market. I don't invest. I don't have anything to do with that. So it doesn't affect my life at all. To me, it's more about understanding that life is short. Like every day, every week, every month that we have to be free and enjoy life to this fullest has been taken away. And then the worst part is, like, when this first started, I'm like, well, we get to spend more time with our friends and family. You know, maybe it'll be short. It won't be the worst of things. But then when the public shaming started happening, when you got together with people, when the you know, you talked about that movie with Matt Damon. I mean, one of the slogans for the movie, I remember on the poster was nothing spreads faster than fear. Well, that's exactly what's happening. And people are so scared that people don't even want to get together with friends and family. So the mental aspect of it, I mean, like I've said on the show a bunch of times, in prison, they punish you by putting you alone. And now we're like just, you know, by ourselves with no enforcement and just walking into the cell by ourselves and locking ourselves up by ourselves, all because of this fear. And, you know, it's like that old quote, you know, anytime you sacrifice freedoms for security, you know, you get neither. And it's like, I truly believe that, you know, and you know, and I'm not sure about these numbers too, because we know for a fact this the testings have, I mean, you hear about stories about fruit being tested and having false positives. You hear all types of false positives. So to me, like, the foundation is based on, you know, the testing, because the testing is the only way you know if somebody is actually dying from this virus or something else. And if that's flawed, then to me, it's like, I'm not even sure what to believe, you know, when you're talking about stories of tests that are 70%, you know, giving false positives or this. And even in some of the press conferences, they've spoke about it. And then the herd immunity thing, it's like, you know, these graphs. I would be curious to know if we did open things up, if maybe we will see things increase, but the total of people who are going to die from it are going to be the same. The only difference is that if we open everything up, it's going to happen quicker, and then it's going to come down. Or if we don't open things up, it's just going to spread slower, and the graph's going to stay, you know, straight. But yet at the end, it's still going to spread. The same people who are going to be at risk of it are going to be the same. The only
probably,
you know,
probably. Although, I mean,
because can you
think
really,
of the counterfactual, yeah, right? If there's no lockdown at all, and everybody had been going to work together in their office buildings this whole time, then you would be at much greater risk of exposure where you are right now. You'd have more people in your town infected. And I think, again, I think it's possible that summer's going to come and burn this thing off. I don't know about you. I live in Texas, where the sun is a murderous, you know, 106 degrees out there, 110 degrees outside. And I think, you know, just hypothetically speaking, not in favor of a government mandate here, but just, metaphysically kind of a deal. You keep everybody locked up, pretend everybody had enough storable food and everybody had enough savings to keep their business afloat when we reopen or whatever. You keep everybody locked all the way down, you very well might have lower numbers of infected and dead overall than if you went ahead and let everybody get infected. And remember, the big argument was, and this probably didn't apply in most places, but of course, you know, we were dealing with the unknown. And this is the other problem, right? Is everybody assumes the worst motives on the part of everyone they disagree with, instead of saying, well, look, it's a novel virus and people were making their best educated guess as to what the problem was going to be and how to prevent it. But the argument was that the last thing we want to see is what we did see in Italy and in Spain, where people are just being triaged to die in the hallways and the parking lots. You know, in Spain, they just sealed up nursing homes and let the people die in there and didn't even try to save them because they were out of capacity. And that's the ultimate nightmare scenario, right? Is that people can't even get into the hospital because they're overwhelmed. And they got near that point in some places in New York, although it didn't get that bad. But that was what they're trying to prevent, was the system itself getting completely overwhelmed. But now, of course, they shift the goalposts, right? Now they're trying to talk about, well, we're going to have to keep the lockdown until we have a vaccine in a year and a half, if we're lucky, right? Which very well, you know, might not work out on the first try. It might be completely unsafe and have to come up with something else. Well, that's what's nuts, right? I mean, they've had all the time in the world to increase the number of available ICU beds. In most places where they built the emergency tent hospitals and stuff, they just turned around and closed them right back down again because the numbers never did hit that high, at least so far. And so maybe it'll be different if we have this conversation in 6 months when the weather gets cold and the noses get runny again, then, you know, maybe everything will be much worse.
Yeah, but how many deaths are going to be acceptable?
Who gets to decide? Who gets to make the trade-off of what risk other people are taking? You know, back to your point that you say everybody went crazy on Facebook when you say, well, look, what if I decide for me and you decide for you? And people just can't stand that, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if I'm just maybe not looking at it from all perspectives, but like, wouldn't driving be the same argument? Like, there's tons of fatalities every year from car accidents. Like, when I drive, I'm taking that risk, and I'm not just putting myself at risk; I'm putting others at risk. So it's like we're not banning driving because it's like, oh, we could save lives. We're not I made the argument before about like starvation. You know, you've seen numbers everything up to like 20,000 people die a day of starvation. Like, that's something that like we don't have to test for. We don't have to come up with a accurate test. We don't have to figure out the virus. We don't have to find out who has or what. All we have to do is feed people, and we don't have a global community coming together for that. So to me, it's like there's a lot of things that just logically don't make sense to me. It's like, okay, is it this actually way different than all these other things? Have we decided that deaths by COVID is on a pedestal more important than other deaths? I mean, I just had a first cousin who passed away from heart failure, right? And, family couldn't go see him in the hospital, you know, and he 51 years old, young, you know, fairly young. And I don't know if having to test him, if any extra steps that were required maybe could have, you know, if those weren't there, maybe they could have saved them. But my point is that, like, it was a reminder that, like, oh shit, people are dying of other stuff too. Like, we're reporting on every single case, every single death. And all it's doing, I mean, the media is obviously spreading fear. One thing that was like kind of a tell for me immediately in the beginning of all this reporting was when like the first like 30, 40, 50, 60 deaths, they were reporting on it. They weren't, none of the mainstream media was even mentioning that it wasn't all in the same state at Washington State. It was even in the same nursing home. And they weren't even telling you that. And when I found out about this, I'm like, wait. All these deaths, these initial deaths, weren't just in the same state, but they're in the same nursing home, and that's not kind of relevant information to share. Like, I think getting some positive information would be helpful too. But you could see, like, they're reporting on this celebrity got this, that celebrity. Like, when all the celebrities were getting it and athletes and stuff, you know, testing positive for it, everybody was reporting on it. But you're not seeing a whole lot of follow up on, you know, people who, like, the fact that, like, just about none of them passed away and they're all fine or whatnot. And so I think that if the media decides to report on every single cancer death, on every single whatever it may be, so any cause of death that has a large number, and you tell those personal stories like, oh, he was a great father, or he was a great brother, or whatever, people will get emotional. And I think people do care about the community. They do care about society. And eventually they'll feel like, you know what, we need to do something about this issue. And and I think the majority of us have been going on with our lives, right? And because I always, you know, I've said this numerous of times, the one good thing I think that comes out of wakes and funerals and losing a loved one, a friend, a family, is that sometimes you need that reminder that, like, tomorrow isn't promised, and don't take today for granted. And I think that too often many of us were going to work, doing our thing, whatever, and people were dying every day in hospitals. Hospitals, you know, but there's always people dying in hospitals. I have friends that work at hospitals. People are dying every day in hospitals, and we didn't care. We just went on with our lives. We didn't feel like we had to come together for this community. So I wonder how much of the reaction was just the power of the media scaring the shit out of people. Because I know people who we talk about it, and then after like a day or two of just watching the news, like, you could see them kind of swing over to the other side and swing over. And it's like, I think that it might be like a September 11th thing, where it's like, when people are emotional, you can convince them into, I guess, maybe going over to the top, where, you know, after September 11th, it's like, let's go to Iraq and Afghanistan because we're all in danger and this is so scary. We got to do something. And it's like, people weren't even thinking logically. And so many people were on board with going to Iraq and Afghanistan, which had nothing to do with September 11th in the first place. And I wonder how much of now is also that similar type of emotional reaction.
Yeah, well, you know what? I don't watch television news at all. So I read a lot. And I quit Twitter too, because Twitter is just the worst for distilling the dumbest in everyone and then in causing reactions against the stupidity of everyone else and all of those things. It's just a terrible trap. But, you know, remember the media and look, essentially whatever the consensus is almost always wrong. It's like you were saying earlier about people. We still got to be able to talk to each other and bring these things up. Because remember, for the first 8 weeks of this, the media said it was no big deal. The media said that you're a racist if you're concerned about this. And the media said that the flu is far more dangerous than this. And the media said that the government says, don't wear a mask. You're in fact more likely to get infected with this germ if you have a mask on. What? Which was just a cynical ploy because the government itself had caused a massive mask shortage. And so they were trying to manage the shortage and make sure more masks were available for hospitals by lying to you and telling you to not cover your face when you're out in a crowd. And so who are the healthcare workers who got the ration masks? Who are they working on? They're working on people who are out there getting coughed on by people with no mask on. Because the government was saying, do not wear a mask. And I know regular human beings, like actual people, who said, well, I don't know. I saw on the news, you're not supposed to wear a mask. And people believe that stuff, you know? And so then they want to swing their consensus the other way to, oh, my God, this is the very worst thing that ever happened in the world, in large part because they want to hang it all around the neck of the president, who did take February off from being concerned about this thing. And, you know, repeatedly played it down and said it was all a conspiracy by the media to make him look bad and this kind of deal, which it turned out to be, right? Like they're going ahead and doing everything they can to play it up in a way which you would think that maybe they would ever learn after Iraq and after Syria and Russiagate and all these things, that they are just undermining their own credibility. And when it comes to a real emergency where they want to manage people's behavior, well, you just proved to us what horrible, cynical liars you are. Now we're supposed to stop and listen to you direct our every behavior to protect us from this germ? When the reality is, this is a new virus. That's why I call it the novel coronavirus. That means that the world's best experts on it are not experts, because nobody is, because nobody knows. But instead of saying to you, look, Ricky, here's the deal, man. Worst case scenario here, we could have as many as 1 million dead. Now, probably it'll only be maybe 100,000 or 200,000 by New Year's. But that's still a hell of a lot, you know? And Trump said he thought it would be 100,000 or 200,000 by August. Well, it looks like that's about right. Looks like it'll be about 100,000 by August. You know, maybe even more than that if things keep going. I think it's going to burn out before then and not probably get quite that high, although I don't know. And they're saying 80 now. I agree with you. That's probably somewhat exaggerated. You know, essentially, as far as the media is concerned, they would rather have us believe what you referred to earlier, the self-refuted model of Neil Ferguson there from the Imperial College in London, who he warned of, he had the biggest, expected death rate warning. And he retracted it himself like 2 weeks later, although people forgot that part that he said, yeah, you know, I don't know too much about that. I think back to what you're saying at the beginning about people have to keep an open mind to hearing the other arguments instead of only hearing what their own side says about the other side. Listen to the other side themselves and try to have a broader open mind. And the problem is when people are afraid, then they're more willing to listen to anyone who speaks with certainty, whether what they're saying makes any sense or not. It can be QAnon. As long as what he claims he swears is true to the nth degree, then it's something to believe in, you know? The way I try to look at it as best I can, right, is that reality is not a matter of opinion. You can have your opinions about reality, but the truth is the truth. So one thing, for example, that the lockdowners ought to take into account is what you're saying about, I don't know if this applies exactly to your cousin there, but there are people who are dying of heart attacks because they're not calling 911 for an ambulance and they're not going to the hospital because they're afraid of getting COVID. Well, man, you might have stood a chance with the COVID. Now you're dead of a heart attack. And I read a thing just the other day about a doctor saying that what people usually say is, oh, man, my heart's really been bothering me since yesterday. I've had this weird chest pain. Now what they say is, oh, I've had this weird chest pain for the last week or so. Right. So they're delaying going in because they're afraid of picking up the virus in the waiting room, which is, you know, a somewhat reasonable fear anyway. And so, you know, this is the deal. And back to the counting of the numbers of the dead here is I talked with a real expert about this stuff who said, listen, remember when I mentioned about the flu count? Oh, yeah, 60,000 died a couple years ago. BS. No, they did not either. You know, those numbers are always inflated and twisted and counted. And look, there's 50 states. There's 35,000 counties. And there's probably 60,000 different coroners. You know, if you count all the states and all the counties, they all have their own different standards for how they count deaths. There is no standard whatsoever from, never mind in New York City, but even in the different boroughs of New York City, even in the different counties of New York State, there are all different standards for how these deaths are counted. The only way we're ever really going to know is a year from now when we can go back and count up the one thing that we can definitely count, the number of bodies. And then we compare the death rate, the excess death rate, to the year before and the projected amount of death that we would have had at that time. And then you have to factor down for how many people died of heart attacks that were unrelated to COVID, but just because they were afraid to go to the doctor, or how many people die because they didn't go to Walgreens to get their medicine because they were afraid of getting the germ from the pharmacist, or, you know, whatever it is. Only then are we going to really know the rate of death. But if you look at the charts for, you know, many different places in the country, it's a hockey stick up. And it's different causes. But remember, too, like, for example, car wreck deaths, as you mentioned, which are, you know, 30 something thousand a year, they've gone way, way down because everybody's been locked up. And yet still we have these huge spikes of death rates in different places. It's actually the Financial Times is the one place where they're really working on trying to count the excess death rate in real time. But this is like the difference between, this is why I think the numbers are probably even higher than we think. It's sort of like during Iraq War II, where you had the Lancet doing their study of the excess death rate. And then you had, on the other hand, Iraq Body Count, where they were only counting the deaths that were reported by two different media sources and where you knew the guy's exact name and, I don't know, home address or whatever, that you could prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that this individual died that day and in a violent attack, then that gets counted for Iraq Body Count. But when the Lancet is doing their excess death rate study, they're picking up people who died from violence who weren't reported, but then they're also picking up people who died at a checkpoint on their way to the hospital who otherwise would have been able to make it in time of something like a heart attack or something like that. Oh, another thing I didn't mention, how many people have cancer but are skipping all their doctor's appointments and they're not finding out early. They're only going to find out when it's already metastasized and this kind of thing. Another thing that's going to cause the excess death rate. But if you look at the Financial Times, they're trying to keep track of that. And you know what? Look, I mean, the reality is here in Austin, there's been 2,000 cases and I think 50 deaths, something like that. I'm actually in Williamson County, just north of Austin. There's been 10 deaths. And so it doesn't feel like a pandemic around here, but it sure as hell would if it you had an outbreak in your house, you know what I mean, or on your street.
I live in Massachusetts, which is supposed to be one of the hot spots, and I've talked to people all over. I mean, the cool thing about having a podcast is that you have listeners all over the world, and
right.
I have people contact me from Spain, from, you know, I had a guest on from Portugal, who's living in northern Portugal where I'm from, where it's supposed to be one of the hot spots, and people from the UK, people from, and everybody's kind of telling me a lot of the same thing. It's like, I don't know anybody who's had it. I don't know anybody who, you know, like they're saying everything.
No, that doesn't mean anything.
No, it doesn't.
That's like the girl that says, yeah, I don't know anybody who voted for Richard Nixon. How could he possibly have won? Well, he won in the biggest landslide in history because everybody you don't know voted for him. That's why. So, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with it. You know, whether you know anybody who's had it or not. I know somebody whose sister had it. Does that count? You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I know two people who think that they probably had it.
My parents.
You know, I don't think this is out of school. I think it's okay to say that Pete Quinones, you know, Mance Rayder from the Institute, that he thinks that he may well have had it back a couple of months ago. Not that he got tested and it was proven, but had, you know, what seemed like a extremely severe flu past the flu season kind of a deal.
Yeah, my parents were the same way. That in February, or the, I think it was February, where they had like, they were bedridden for a week or two. And I mean, they've never had the flu like that, where they had flu-like symptoms, but they couldn't get out of bed, were a mess. And they're fine. You know, they're in their late 50s or whatnot. But I guess my point in regards to, you know, people saying they don't know anybody who got it or died from it or whatnot, you're right. I mean, it's not like obviously real evidence of anything. But my point is, like, I'm getting the same type of reaction where people are contacting me saying, from the outside looking in, the media is selling the idea of Massachusetts like the walls are falling and then everything is like there's zombies out in the road. And like, you know, they're making it out to be, you know, almost like the world's ending here. And then if you live here, you know, I know people who work at the local hospitals in Springfield, Massachusetts, which is, you know, kind of a bigger city where the Basketball Hall of Fame is and whatnot. And they're like, no, we're slow. Things are fine. Like one of my buddies is a supervisor at one of the local hospitals in the ER room. And he's like, we're telling people if you don't have, you know, any really severe symptoms, then just go home. You're fine. You know, don't worry about it. So the thing that always scares me is that I know the media, it's no different than like a snowstorm, you know, like in living in New England, you know, like snowstorm right around the corner. And we'll get all this rating spike because they're like, oh, snowstorm, you know, I got to keep up with this. You know, and I wonder how much of this fear is being pushed for ratings and
plenty.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Look, it's just like, what was CNN's interest in pushing Iraq War II? They're selling dish soap, man. They're selling dish soap and making billions, you know, it's extremely lucrative. So, yeah, I mean, I don't doubt that at all. I think, especially in the case of TV news, nobody should be watching TV news. If you're going to watch TV news, watch the Jimmy Dore show or something. I mean, watch your favorite podcast in video form. You know, watch Ricky's show, but you're not going to learn a thing from CNN other than this is what the bad guys are up to today. And this is what they would, you know, lie to you and have you believe for their own agenda. You know, a great example of this was in South Dakota, where the governor of South Dakota had made herself TV news enemy number one by refusing to lock the state down. And then the big headline came out, oh, they've had a massive spike in cases in South Dakota. But then that massive spike was all within one building. It was the meat processing plant. And it was a bad outbreak. I don't know how deadly it was or how dangerous it was for the people who got it. But it was like, what, 700 people were infected or something like that. Well, that'll do a lot for your line graph, but it makes it sound like it's spreading throughout the population of South Dakota when in fact it's just not. But they'll leave out that information and they'll just, you know, again, all sides sign up for whose team you're on and then cherry pick all the evidence that you want that fits your point of view and exclude everything else. And you know what? I think this is what I value about the virus crisis more than any other kind of thing. Is it really is a great clarifier in just how stupid everybody is and just how desperate they are to cling on to their leader and their, you know, oracle of truth and to believe what that person says and go along with this narrative or that narrative, no matter what, and completely unable to be swayed. And you know, it's always been like this, but I find more and more and more and more people ask me, wait, are you saying you're pro-Trump? Oh, wait, no, you're saying that you're pro-Pelosi? Oh, wait, I don't understand. Because no matter what you say, all they can do is try to figure out whose team you're on. It has nothing to do with what you're saying. The question is, what is your secretly concealed motive for saying the thing that you're saying? Clearly, nobody believes what they're saying. They only say what they say because they're trying to manipulate you into believing the thing that serves their evil, secret, corrupt interest. And then, so that's the presumption with everything. And so, You know, and listen, I'm talking about people I've known in my life, people who know me personally, saying to me, well, geez, I don't know. You kind of sound like you're leaning toward the Democrat there. Well, but I didn't say anything at all positive about any Democrat. All I did was slam a Republican. That's all I did was slam a Republican. Well, I don't know, Horton. Sounds like you're starting to lean pretty left there. Huh? And that's all anybody can do is, you know, in other words, reason is dead and reasonable argument is just dead. Everything is identity politics to the nth degree. It makes no sense to think that you would hate them all, that you would disbelieve them all, that you would think that the virus is serious, but that you're completely opposed to any mandatory lockdowns, right? That you know, you think any of conflicting values could still both be valuable. You know, you have to choose your side like it's just football. And by the way, speaking of football, so we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys and you're a Dallas Cowboys guy. And then it turns out that the whole team are all a bunch of crackhead wife beater criminals. Every one of them is carrying a felony. What do the Cowboy fans do? Well, they ignore that completely and they raise their boy to be a good Cowboy fan anyway, because man, it's just the shape of the football and the color silver on the jersey that matters. The name of the city, a big proud Texas city is all that matters. The guys that make up the team and their foibles, it's completely irrelevant. You pick your team, that's your team. And that's how people are with partisan politics. And it's along with fear. It's the great mind killer. It's just, you know, it makes smart people dumb.
Well, I think because so often we want to believe that we just look at all we look at things logically, we look at all the information, then we come to a conclusion. But in a lot of cases, we have a conclusion, then look for the information to back it. And, you know, I mean, I've been one where I've been back and forth with the masks thing. You know, I've been getting a lot of heat online about, like, you know, sharing the Fauci interview from 60 Minutes. Like, oh, well, that was from March. I'm like, I get it. My point of all this isn't arguing about if masks are good or bad or any of this. And I agree with you also, even with the flu numbers. I've heard people say this because I've been one that I have said, you know, I have used that point that, hey, you know, this many people died of flu every year. And then I've had people, you know, tell me, and I think the No Agenda podcast was one show also that they talked about this, how they inflate the flu numbers.
Scientific American had a good write-up on it. I'm almost certain that was the footnote if you want to look at that.
Yeah, yeah. And so it makes sense, but in the same way that they can inflate the flu numbers for financial gain and for money from the government or whatever, I mean, the same thing could be happening with this. And so it's just like, to me, it's like there is a lot of unknowns. And to me, it's like, you know, even if you quarantine yourself, you have to get food from one place to another. You have to get, you know, packages from Amazon. You have to, you know, whatever you do, you know, to try to not contact other people. I think eventually you're going to have some contact. You know, like people have said, like, oh, you can't go to the park, but you can have a bunch of people in a Walmart building all shopping together or a Target or whatever. So it's like, it's free, you know, if we live in a free society, people are going to still be in groups in some way or another. So the spread of this, I don't think is ever going to stop if you believe in the, you know, the virus is as lethal or as dangerous as it is. I mean, again, I think the testing is very questionable. You know, the fact that there is no gold standard to the test, that you know, all these stories about false positives or whatever. But to me, it's like that part of it isn't as important as the fact that it seems like one thing that everybody agrees on is that for the most part, if you're younger and healthy, you're fine. You know, you're going to be okay. And if that's the case, why are people who are talking about vitamin C online being, you know, removed? Why are protest videos, you know, which is a constitutional right, why are those being flagged and removed online? All the censorship, all the media pushing fear, all the, you know, all the CBS News and everybody who's getting caught kind of being deceiving, which is nothing new. And then also, you know, you and I are very similar in regards to, I think, one of the first topics that really got me passionate about being outspoken about bigger issues. What was the Iraq war and being anti-war and all this stuff? And you know, when I started learning about the influence of the military-industrial complex and all this stuff, it was very motivating to be outspoken and tell people, like, it's not, when you have this much influence, like the military-industrial complex, you can get the media to lie. You can get any, you know, put out fake statistics. You can, you know, use all the propaganda techniques to convince the public to anything you want. And today, like, I feel like that was my first focus was the anti-war military industrial complex, because I felt like that was probably one of the biggest threats in regards to deceiving the public. But today, Big Pharma, in lobbying and in many cases, and many people believe, have way more influence than military industrial complex. They spend, I mean, every other commercial, I mean, I know you don't watch TV, but if you're watching MSNBC, Fox News, CNN, every other commercial, and we're only one of two countries, New Zealand being the other, that let pharmaceutical companies promote to do commercials and promote to market to the public. Every other commercial is a pharmaceutical company. And saw an article from, like, I think it was 2013, about how much money these pharmaceutical companies spend in research and development, and then how much they spend in marketing. And it's like billions of dollars difference. You know, it's like they're spending what?
Yeah, it's because of the patent system. Yeah, it's a total racket, the way drugs are. I mean, as everybody knows, right, that you can get the exact same drugs for way cheaper anywhere else in the world. And it's because of America's corrupt patent system there. And you're right, and especially the nightly news on the major news channels every night. And, you know, their audiences skew much older too. And so that's definitely, you know, you're right that I don't think there's any mystery. I can't prove the solid connection here. I don't think there's any mystery in the playing down of Plaquenil as a treatment and then the playing up of this Remdesivir, which is still under patent when Plaquenil's patent expired 30 years ago and this kind of thing. But meanwhile, it's being used successfully by doctors around the world. And, you know, I think this goes one thing, you know, toward just how skeptical to be about all the numbers and this, that, and the other thing. And it's true. You know, there are, as you talked about, the incentives for the hospitals to overcount. We could have talked about, maybe we did mention, the incentive of the Democratic governors to make things worse during Trump times, you know, would be another. But also look at what's going on around the world, too. In Russia, they're locking down everything, too, because they've got bad outbreaks. And, you know, in South Africa, I talked to a friend who was on the phone with a friend in Cape Town yesterday who said they are not allowed out of their houses at all, except, you know, for like 2 hours at night to exercise. Like, they are in supermax lockdown there right now. And I'm not justifying that or anything like that, but I'm just saying, you know, their public policies in all these different countries around the world are not about making Trump look bad or making American pharmaceutical companies rich. They have their own problems. You know, in Ecuador, at least for a few weeks there, they're piling bodies in the street because the government and the morgues and everybody were completely overwhelmed. And so they're like literally leaving their family members in cardboard boxes out on the sidewalk for someone to eventually come and get. So, and you know, there's a lot of different and mysterious rhyme and reason as to why some societies end up doing so much better than others on this. I mean, I think a lot of the problem in Italy is everybody hugging and kissing like crazy. They kiss you on both sides of your cheeks and this kind of deal. In South Korea, they don't. They kind of bow. They never shook hands anyway in South Korea. You know what I mean? They wear masks anyway. Especially in Japan is like that too. So there's, you know, genetic differences, there's cultural differences, and, you know, all these different things going on. But I think, and again, I'm completely biased toward freedom here, but I think, you know, we should keep a pretty broad, open mind about the information coming in about the virus. At the same time, I'm also the first to say that I think we pretty much all agree that we're pleasantly I don't know about necessarily surprise, but it's good to see that the numbers are a lot less worse than we thought they might be, right? Again, this is a novel virus, and people were making their best guesses and their best predictions and preparing for the worst. I mean, when the study says the numbers could get this bad, that's not necessarily a prediction that is exactly how bad it will be. That's saying that is the worst case scenario, essentially, would be that it's, you know, X number of people and that kind of thing. But, you know, and I think probably in most places around the world, that they're pleasantly surprised to find out that it's not as bad as they thought it might be. But then again, you know, there are a lot of places like in Afghanistan where the outbreak's been really bad. Iran had it really bad. You know, the level of poverty and the level of, you know, healthcare options and that kind of thing are greatly determinant. And I think, you know, I don't know, I haven't looked at the latest out of Brazil, but you look at those shanty towns in some of those Latin American countries there where all the rich people live in the skyscraper and everybody else lives in a cardboard shack in the mud down at the bottom there. You know, I don't know. It's not over yet as far as that goes. I think, you know, and you know, we're pretty far from it being over here too, you know, in the long term. Like I said, I think it'll probably burn itself out mostly this summer and then hopefully that'll be the end of that. But all the germologists seem to predict that this fall and winter, it's going to come back and it's going to be at the same time as the flu. And they'll probably try to lock us back down again, which I don't think will work then. I think it'd be too late for them to try that again. But, you know, I think we very well could have, you know, more than 100,000 deaths, and maybe quite a bit more than that. And, you know, by the way, you mentioned about the roads. You know, one of the big problems with the roads, of course, is ask a liberal, they'll tell you. They're owned by the government. You can't have roads without government. But the fact that they're owned by the government means there's no accountability whatsoever for dangerously designed roads. And, you know, instead of killing Iraqis all day, here's a project that maybe could be financed, would be to study with big data where all the car wrecks occur. And of course, there's plenty of this that you can blame on drunk driving or blame on bad weather. But I bet you you'll find that super majorities of the wrecks happen in the very same intersections over and over and over again because of how poorly designed they are. And if we were just even making the slightest bit of effort to say, man, this interchange has got to be rebuilt. It's too bad of a blind corner here. No wonder everybody keeps getting T-boned or whatever it is. You could save tons of lives that way. But they're not interested in doing that because it's nobody's fault, because it's the government's fault and they can never be held responsible for anything. And I'm sorry, dude, I'm late. I have to run.
Oh, it's okay. Mickey. Hey, no problem. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with me, Scott. It was nice catching up. I'm glad to hear that you guys are safe and staying sane and everybody's well.
You too, man.
Yeah, hopefully I'll have you on again. I wanted to touch on the China thing a little bit, but we'll definitely save that for the next discussion. And keep up the great work, Scott, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks again, man. Happy to do it anytime.
Hey, thanks. Take care, Scott.